You cannot lose games in the NFL and still win.
One day I understand. One day, go see the baby be born and come back. You're a Major League Baseball player.
Did I not tell you?
Yes, you did.
See, don't answer. These are rhetorical questions because you know I told you and you know I'm not.
Analytics don't work at all. It's just a crap to some people who were really smart made up to try to get in the game because they had no talent.
This kid is a gamer. He's a follower. He's a playmaker and a shot caller.
In case you didn't know,
I got T-Bone. He shattered the mold. And all he does is win. All he does is win.
Hello and welcome to a Flash Pod edition of Hot Takedown, 538's sports podcast. I'm Chad Matlin, editor at 538. Across the table from me, the man himself, Neil Payne.
Hey,
hello,
what's
Neil.
Up, Chad?
How you doing?
Doing good. Not quite as good as the Warriors or Kobe Bryant, but we'll talk about the Warriors.
Yeah, let's leave Kobe aside. we were talking before the show about how I think this 60-point narrative is a bit bit of grandstanding from Kobe, given the number of shots he took, as well as the media who want to celebrate someone who they had
media
a love-hate
like us, Chad.
Relationship. Anyway, back to the Warriors. This is a Flash Pod Hot Takedown to talk about the Warriors, who last evening set the record for most wins in an NBA season. They went 73-9 overall. They won 125-109 against the Grizzlies. Neil, they did it. We didn't think this was going to happen a few games ago. They dropped their odds to do so, dropped way down after they lost to the Celtics.
Yeah, it was really funny that we didn't think they would do it for the past maybe, you know, it's a certain point over the past couple weeks, but probably every other point before that all season long, almost like dating back to the very beginning of the season because of the way that they started on the winning streak to the regular season, it was kind of taken for granted that they would do this all season long, and they seemed unstoppable, and only toward the end did it seem ever really in doubt, and then they righted things and pulled it out in the end.
So I want to talk about I want to set this season in context, essentially, of what the Warriors did. That means we probably have to start with Steph Curry, right? I mean, this is a guy who one would assume will get a unanimous MVP at the end of the season.
I would think so.
Unless Russell Westbrook and his triple-double machine somehow disrupt that. But
I just don't see that happening.
And so, you know, what we wrote early in the season, Benjamin Morris, one of our colleagues, wrote about Steph Curry being the revolution in the NBA and breaking basically the way that math is done in the NBA, taking shots that should not be efficient, yet being efficient from that deep, from the basket. Did that carry all the way through this year? He got even better from 30 feet out, right?
Yeah, I mean, so there's some metrics using like SportVU that, which I should say is a camera tracking system in every NBA arena that tracks the position of the ball and every player on the floor. They can do things, like people like Second Spectrum, they calculate based on the position of the ball and the proximity of defenders and everything like that, what the odds of making a shot are from any point on the floor. And if you look at the differential between Curry's actual shooting percentage and the expected shooting percentage in a metric like that, it's like off the charts. It's by far number one in the NBA. He makes so many more shots from places where he has no business making as many shots that it transforms the nature of an offense.
What's incredible is, so he set the record for the most made three-pointers with 402, breaking his own record in the process. His teammate Klay Thompson had 276, I think it was, made three-pointers. That would have set a record if Steph Curry
Curry didn't exist. Yeah. Although that's
then he doesn't get the ball distributed
right.
The same way. But all things being equal, maybe
yes.
Is what we should say. But so that brings us to sort of the team element of the Warriors. Is this the sort of pinnacle of the new NBA, which is a small ball, 3-point focused NBA that tries to focus in on efficiency? Is this the end point of that revolution, or is it not even part of it because the talent and the personnel is so much better than the rest of the NBA that it doesn't really apply?
No, I mean, I think that all the takes that you hear about them sort of being the exemplars of the way that the game has changed over the past 5 to 10 years are totally right. Like this team, and we can talk about their place in history, they aren't the best team of all time if you look at point differential per 100 possessions, but all of the teams that ranked above them in that particular metric on a single season, so we're talking 96-97 Bulls, Boston Celtics from 2008, the 71 1971 Milwaukee Bucks, all of those teams were relatively slow-paced teams. In fact, all of them ranked below the league average in pace. Meanwhile, the Warriors actually were second in the league in pace factor. So I think this is one of the first cases, maybe you could put up the 72 Lakers and last year's Warriors as the other examples of a team playing this particular fast, up-tempo style of play and being able to have one of these dominating seasons, because the other dominating seasons from the annals of NBA history were all relatively slow-paced teams.
And so the pace matters because it's part of this sort of push towards taking advantage of the talents that a team has on the court, right? So if you're as good as the offense is at Golden State, then you want more possessions and you want a higher pace.
Oh yeah, for sure. And if you look at the way that they spread out the workload on the team, you know, Curry himself, as great a season as he had, his usage rate was 32.6%, which is really high. But you see some other seasons like Michael Jordan, you know, those seasons were even higher. More of the shots and possessions were distributed or concentrated, rather, among one or two players like a Jordan and a Pippen. But then on the same side, you also have, you know, Longley and Rodman and guys like that, not really actually contributing that
and
much.
Steve Kerr himself.
And Steve Kerr himself, who was phenomenally efficient when he shot but didn't really use a huge amount of possessions, the Warriors kind of break that mold also, because you see their offensive workload spread out so much beyond just Curry, beyond Thompson, to Draymond Green and players like that, that's also kind of a paradigm shift. And I think it's only possible with pace. And there's some research showing that the faster paced a team is, the less of a concentration that it has, because you simply can't, you're not running half court sets where you're funneling the ball to one guy and running a bunch of ISOs. If you're leading the league in possessions per game, you're playing a game more like those Showtime Lakers where Magic Johnson led the team in usage, but he only had about 20 to 25% usage. So this is the first case of a team like that being historically dominant within a season.
So what does this mean for the playoffs? I feel like I've at least been waiting for the Warriors to regress to the mean all season long.
Really?
But it hasn't happened. It seems like they've set a new floor for themselves, and that floor is far beyond the ceiling for most other teams in their play this season. I think 538's playoff odds had them somewhere near a 50% chance to win the NBA title.
42.
Okay, so 42. So it really depends on what happens with the Spurs,
which is
basically the only team standing in their way according to the models. Is this going to be a super simple run for them through the playoffs aside from the Spurs? Or is there something about playing a team over and over again that maybe will help the opponents of the Warriors start to chip away?
I mean, maybe there's something to that. Certainly as a rule, I think that playoff series are closer than you would predict based on the regular season metrics if you control for the distribution of playing time, just because there is that effect of adjustments and counter-adjustments and all of those things. But at the same time, I think the thing that might be standing the Warriors' way is not necessarily who they'll play in any given series, especially these like the first round series against Houston, but rather this could be one of the most ridiculous second rounds in terms of just the total the parity across the teams, but also the total level of talent playing top to bottom in the second round in the Western Conference of any conference in any season in NBA history. If you look at the top four seeds in the West, they range from 73 wins with Golden State, 67 wins with the Spurs, but then number three and number four, OKC and the Clippers, won 55 and 53 games respectively. So those two teams, in a normal season, certainly in this year's Eastern Conference, could have been like a vying for a two seed. Each would have been a three seed. Instead, you know, the four seeded Clippers are going to have to be, you know, they could pose a problem for the Warriors in the second round, and certainly the other teams could pose a problem later on.
And after the Warriors won the championship last year, it did seem like, especially in the West, everyone knew that the road to the finals is going to go through the Warriors. And so these teams have retooled themselves in the offseason specifically for this moment, to match up with the Warriors and try maybe and go big against them and force them away from their smaller lineups. If you're someone like the Spurs or with LaMarcus Aldridge, for example.
Yeah, I think that's an example, a prime example of teams tailoring it. Although the Aldridge move was sort of planned, if you hear them tell it, years in advance. And I think that it's a case of like you said at the top of the segment, the Spurs and Warriors are on this collision course, and these other teams might stand in their way, but I think we're all kind of assuming that it's going to come down to those two teams. And we really don't have a whole lot of evidence, despite the fact that the Warriors set the record. They played each other during the regular season a number of times. I watched every single one of those games. I don't think there was a whole lot to be learned from the overall picture of that. And if you want to talk single seasons, during the season itself, the Spurs, not only did the Warriors not have the best efficiency differential, that's point margin per 100 possessions, of any team ever, that's still the 96 Bulls, they didn't even have the number one efficiency differential within 2016. The Spurs actually had the third best of all time, trailing only the 96 and the 97 Bulls this season. Now, you could say some of that is because the Warriors were constantly ahead. They were playing garbage time minutes a lot, so you have to take that into account. But I think for all the talk about the Warriors, they're not that much better than they were last year. But last year, the second best team that they had to face, I think, in the West was 4 points per game worse than them in terms of efficiency differential. Now they may have to go through a team, probably going to have to go through a team that actually had a better efficiency differential than them during the regular season. So I'm very interested to see how that plays out.
Interesting. All right. Well, we'll be covering the NBA playoffs all 2 months long because these things last
they
forever.
Last
a marathon.
A long time.
At 538.com. Neil, we witnessed history.
We did.
That's what being a sports fan is all about, right?
You
even if you're not rooting for the Warriors, you're tuning in to the games and also to a season to try and see something that feels like it breaks the mold, right? That breaks the status quo of what we thought was possible. And this season in the NBA, we saw it over and over.
Yeah, and so often we're trying to kind of shoehorn things into being the best ever or historic in some way, shape, or form. This one didn't actually need that kind of like forced hype or anything like that. They literally set the record.
All right, that'll do it for this week's show. Thanks, Neil, for doing a flash pod.
Thanks, Chad. Always happy to flash pod.
Hot takedown listeners, Kate Fagan will be back with us next week. Our podcast producer is Joe Sykes. Our podcast overlord is Jody Abrigan. We got production assistance from Tony Chow and Ryan Nantel. You can email us at podcast@538.com. We would love to hear what you think. Find us on Stitcher, Downcast, your favorite, whatever your favorite podcast app is. We're also on iTunes. Subscribe at itunes.com/538. While you're there, review and rate the show. We'd love to hear what you think. Also, review and rate the other 538 shows. We have an elections podcast. We have a data and society podcast. Neil and I have a secret podcast about the Mets.
That's our little secret.
Yeah. Our theme song is by Mystery Mansion. I'm Chad McMatlin. Talk to you next time.